Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH. Know Your Risk Radio is hosted by Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often volatile markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us for yet another of the most scintillating hours in finance radio. I was kidding with our OG audience, the KTTH listeners, right before we switched over here. And just told them, I got to keep reminding you of that. I got to keep reminding you of that because it's like, you know, I hate to quote somebody like Goebbels. Right. But it's if you repeat a lie long enough, people believe it. So I'm just going to keep pumping that most scintillating hour of finance radio at you because, and again, like I was telling our KTTH listeners, it's going to get to a point where you're at a family barbecue, right? And or you got like first base or third base seats to the Mariners game or whatever. And you're like, hey, I can't go. I got to leave. Well, where are you going? That's the most scintillating hour in finance radio's on. I can't miss it. So I'm just going to keep beating that drum, guys, just so you know. Anyway, though, all kidding aside, we've got a great show planned for you today. Market update, we're going to hit it. Got a ton to discuss. And we're also going to, you know what, we're going to focus on bias. And one of the reasons we're going to focus on bias is it's something that really isn't understood out there, I think, unless you do this for a living, unless you're actually doing the research and doing the data. So we're gonna talk about bias, and we're gonna give you examples so you can see exactly what we mean. But most importantly, this was a realization that I had based on client questions. So we've had a lot of client questions, and we've had listener questions emailing in, even some calling in. And asking us, you know, things like, what do we mean by liquidity-driven market? And what does it mean when the Fed's printing money? And what does it mean when, you know, they're backstopping the court? Anyway, rather than addressing each one of those one-off, I've always been a big believer in context, meaning that I think rather than explaining something, rather than saying what Fed printing is, explain the whole scenario surrounding it and show you what it does. I think that's the best way to define things. You know, anybody can rattle off a definition, right? But can you explain it in a way that somebody in fifth grade would understand? And I'm not implying that you guys aren't sophisticated enough to understand it. I'm implying that you don't do this for a living. And I also know that when you don't do it for a living, and if you don't know, a lot of times we don't ask questions because we don't want to admit that we don't know. And hopefully we can clear that up. Hopefully this segment that we're going to do, and now it's going to extend, it's going to be a longer interview than normal because we're going to be joined by Chase Taylor of Pinecone Macro Research. And we're going to split the interview really up into three parts. And I think the best way to describe Fed liquidity and all these things is, where have we come from in terms of the last 20 years? When did Fed liquidity become a driving force in markets? It always has been to an extent, but it really has shown its face over the last 20 years. That's where it's really become the most impactful. So we're going to talk about A, where we've come from over the last 20 years. What has changed? And what I mean by that is if you look back at the American economy for an extended period of time, you see 3-4% average growth. You see long, you know, 1949 to 1999, I don't believe we ever had a single year in which markets were down more than 30%. And obviously a switch flipped in 1999-2000 because we've had three drops of greater than 30%. And I still do believe that this current scenario will yield the third drop in the last 19-20 years of 50% or greater. So now we could be wrong. But we still very much believe that is the case. And why is that? Why have we gotten so much volatility? So we got the three parts that we're going to address this. And my goal is at listening to this, right? Once you've listened to that interview today and the three different parts, that you'll have a full understanding of where we're at and why we think some of the things. One of the tough things about this job, again, doing it as a living, as a professional, is you forget a lot of times that the people you're talking to aren't looking at these charts all day and aren't, you know, aren't doing all this research. And you know, so we want to lay it out so you know, so you can speak to these things with some level of confidence and understand what's going on around you, because I think it's imperative. And one of the biggest reasons why I think it's imperative, and it's funny because this will come up a lot in our discussion with Chase Taylor today. One of the reasons why I think that this is set so important right now is that, look, and this is fact. We'll go over this more in the market update. You may think markets are going up. You may think markets are going down. That, look, that's fine. That's called opinion. You could be right, right? A perfect example of this is I thought a big bear market rally was in the offing. Even there at March 23rd, we were expecting a bounce. I really didn't think it'd go this far. So I was wrong. My opinion on how far this would extend was wrong. So there's opinion in finance. There's also fact. And the fact is that there is no time in market history where asset prices have been more disconnected from economic fundamentals. And the crazy thing is that does not guarantee that you're going to see some big catastrophic drop imminently. It certainly could, right? That could certainly be the result, but it's not a guarantee. And I think this discussion will, A, help illuminate the idea. If you believe the market is going up and you are long and strong stocks and you're buying the Teslas and the, you know, all this stuff that is, that, you know, just that is pretty incredibly priced, to put it lightly. I still think that it would behoove you to listen to this segment because you may end up being proven right. Right. But at least you should know the reality and the water and what you and where, you know, and where you're swimming. Right. You should know the environment that is currently surrounding you. And it's going to make you a better investor. It's going to help you make better decisions. So I'm really excited to do this with Chase. My hope is that it's really beneficial. And because what we want people to do, there's so much confusion. We're used to looking. We've known for a long time that. And I think even the casual investor knows that, quote unquote, the stock market's not the economy. But let's be honest. All of us look to the stock market as a guiding light or a gauge on how the economy is doing. That gauge has never been more disconnected from the underlying economic fundamentals than it is today. And like I said, that does not guarantee the fact that you're looking at some collapse. And to understand that, like I said, you need to understand the full picture. So that's what we're going to paint for you today. If nothing else, you may disagree with me. That's fine. But we're not going to inject a lot of opinion. So I don't think there's room to really disagree. My commitment to you, as always, is we're going to present the facts. And hopefully you leave this discussion better informed. So anyway, let's get into the market update. Another crazy week. Not crazy so much because, well, I mean, you had 2 days in a row of on virtually no news of, you know, the Dow Jones. And I hate people saying points when it comes to the Dow because, you know, everybody's like 150 point drop. Well, when the Dow's at 25,000, that's not that big. That's 0.5%, right? Or 0.6%. So I hate talking about points in the Dow. I think it's disingenuous. The Dow was up 800 points. Okay, it's up 2.5%. Let's put it into context, okay? But yeah, 2 days this week where the Dow's up 500 points on nothing. Really interesting. The interesting thing about that is this incredible divergence we are seeing on a regular basis with the indexes. It is not a big deal. We saw a 2% spread. It might have been larger than that. I think at one point in the day, one of the days this week, you saw a 2.5% spread between the Dow Jones and the NASDAQ. Now, that's remarkable because I cannot recall a time where we've seen that big a divergences. But we've been seeing those divergences, but typically they've been the NASDAQ significantly outperforming. And then sure enough, today, it's the exact inverse opposite. So needless to say, what does that mean? I don't really know. I think that it really points to the bipolar nature of this market. I think it points to the market still being very volatile, which you can see represented by the VIX still at 30. You know, the VIX hasn't dipped below 25 since this all kicked off a couple months ago. And so the other thing I think is that, and we can see this unequivocally, retail investors are playing a much bigger role in the market than they have at really any time in the last, you know, probably since 1999, actually. And you can see this on the retail trading platforms like Robinhood and TD Ameritrade. I mean, the trading activity has just gone through the roof on the retail side. The other thing that's really interesting is that how bullish, and I've said this before, but how bullish the average retail investor is. It's really incredible. I've been in this game now pretty much in one way or the other for the vast majority of the last 20 years. I have not seen retail investors this engaged, this plugged in, and this excited, this stock mania hungry crazy since 1999. And I think that has a lot. How much that has to do with it, I don't know, but I think it has a lot to do with it based on the stocks that are going up, based on the prices of these things, the idea that valuations don't matter, because they really don't right now. Will they eventually? Sure, they always do, but they don't right now. And they haven't for some time, but this is certainly on steroids. It's a remarkable situation. And one of the things you're seeing there is these big divergences in these indexes. And the fascinating thing is how it flips back and forth so violently. So again, a couple days today, for the majority of the week, actually, I want to say it's today being the only exception, Friday, where you see the Dow outperforming. And value, we saw value stocks. We had a couple days this week where we saw performance out of value stocks that we hadn't seen in a really long time. There's been a couple that I've cited over the last 2 or 3 months, but this one was big. I mean, we had days where our value portfolio was up 3.5-4%, which is pretty remarkable. And again, especially with this backdrop, because, no secret, we've talked about it at great length, but, you know, we're in the greatest divergence or underperformance period in history of value to growth. So it's pretty nuts. The other interesting thing is we've been talking the last 2 weeks, and we'll get into some specifics, but I really want to lay the groundwork here. We've been talking the last 2 weeks about these technical levels, right? The 200-day moving average, which right now is basically right at 3,000 on the S&P. Currently, as I'm talking to you right now on Friday, you're looking at, let's see here, let's update that screen so I'm giving you real stuff. You're looking at the S&P at 3027. It was down as low as really close to 3,000 at some point today. I have no clue where we're going to end up today. There's a lot of different moving parts. But basically, you have now crossed over the 61.8 Fibonacci retracement level, which was at 2930, and you've crossed over the 200-day moving average. I will tell you this. I don't know what the exact percentage number is, but you guys know my thoughts about valuations and the underlying health of the economy. Both are obscenely bad. Well, valuations are good if you own those stocks, but if you're looking to buy stocks, they're horrible, historically horrible. But when you break through those levels, I think even if you're a bearish investor, you have to prepare yourself for this market going way higher. And guys, this is one of the things that we've been talking about lately. Should it? Oh, of course not. It's insanity. Okay. And if you hear people try to rationalize it, just disregard them. It just, because they could be right about the market going higher. I'm sitting here telling you that I'm talking way higher. And one of the reasons for that, guys, is when you're this disconnected from reality, and I think we've said this on the show, but we have a saying in our firm, you know, if you're traveling to the moon and your trajectory is off by 0.5% or off by 20%, the result is exactly the same. You're going to miss by a lot. And I think stock valuations are kind of like that. When you see stock valuations completely untethered from reality, what's to say it doesn't get a lot worse? And there's reasons for it. One of the reasons is that if you've got to have money anywhere right now, where would you want to have it? What country in the world would you want to have it? The U.S., right? So I think you're seeing a lot of foreign inflows of capital. And I think the danger guys, that's not a fundamental reason to buy stocks. Okay. Cause the scary thing about that is that can reverse at any moment, right? There's no value there. At the same time, you hear a lot of these one-sided guys, right? And it drives me nuts in finance. You hear the bulls and the bears. What about the in-between? If you're a rational human being, you may have your outlook, but you should acknowledge that quite frequently, And truthfully, it's only a matter of time until the market does what you don't think it's going to do, right? Nobody has a perfect track record. Nobody, which is why market timing doesn't work, right? So you really have to get a good grasp of the underlying reality, but you really have to understand that we are completely disconnected from economic reality, and that could get significantly wider for a whole variety of reasons. The Fed printing money, dumping epic amounts of money into this market, the foreign inflows of capital, people trying to get out of their own, right? There's a lot of reasons. So what do you need? And again, this isn't me trying to plug our book. This is exactly why we build portfolios the way we do. It really is. Because we've been disconnected from fundamental value for quite a while. Now, this is that on steroids, no question about it. But again, it's the biggest part of it is driven by the central banks. Remember, markets now have a source of capital and liquidity that they've never really had before. They had it in marginal ways, but never like this, where, you know, you've got the U.S. government running $6 to $7 trillion deficit in a single year, just plugging money into the economy. The Federal Reserve, you know, earmarking $6.5 trillion of new money pumping into the economy. And if you want to know what that can do, what it can do is it can basically pull you within a whisper of all-time highs on the indexes, all-time high valuations in the middle of the greatest economic shock. Even the biggest bears out there need to acknowledge that, right? Why is there any? And guys, I know that some of you are going to disagree with me, okay? But I'm just talking facts here. Again, I'm not saying I am specifically telling you right now. Markets could go way up. Okay, I don't think that's the way it's going to play out. But remember what I always say, right? Which is we don't build portfolios based on what I think is going to happen. Our client portfolios have to work out whether or not I'm right or wrong. Why? Because I'm going to be wrong plenty of times. So what you hear me talking about is not reflective of the way our accounts are up. Matter of fact, I think we're up today. The difference with us is just we have significant downside protection, right? And we've talked about this a lot. And guys, there's no other way to play this. There really isn't, right? If you're a bear, I think eventually you're going to be proven right, but it could take a year. It could take a year and another 30 or 40% on the indexes. Who knows, right? The flip side is when you are this disconnected, and again, you have never seen, without accounting for interest rates, you in your life, nor in anyone's life, have you ever seen a market more expensive? Okay? If somebody tells you that is not the case, they do not know what they are talking about or they are being disingenuous. Now, do I know for a fact that'll be a case 12 months from now? No. Because there are guys out there saying, it's not either. If you could count for 2021 earnings, okay, well, why don't you tell me what you think 2021 earnings are going to look like? Nobody knows. And if you want a perfect example of that, go back and read analyst reports in 2007. I don't think a single major analyst, I could be wrong, but of the vast majority of major analysts on the street, all of them had positive earnings, higher markets in 2008. Okay, so take that with a grain of salt the size of my desk when people say that. Okay. Because all I know are the facts that are on the facts on the ground today, and that you've never seen a more expensive market, and it is happening in the largest economic shock in country history. Okay? Now, could it theoretically grow into that valuation? Yes. Anytime you've ever had markets this overvalued in the past, that is not the way it's played out. And I don't think this time will be any different. But we have to acknowledge that there are aspects of this time that are different. One of the biggest is look what the government's doing. I mean, think about that. People are getting raises by being unemployed. And I think that encapsulates the level of spending that is going into this market. And like I said, you also have inflows of foreign capital. And look, one of the other side of this, guys, I mean, here's another way that this could play out. is that maybe we don't see the 08-09 collapse kind of thing. Maybe we see the S&P bounce between, you know, 3,200 maybe to the upside, to 2,500 to the low side, and maybe we stay in that range for 5, 6, 7 years. Who knows? But I will say that historically speaking, the one thing that you can count on is that returns over the next decade on markets are not going to be very good. Just historically speaking, looking at the averages. Just because they're already so highly valued, right? At some point, those stocks have to grow into those valuations. So, and we're going to talk more about, we're going to talk more with Chase about this, bring in some more macroeconomic data and you know, fill in some of the gaps there. Let's see, gold is all over the place. I don't know, really know what to make of gold. It hasn't broken through key levels to the upside. It hasn't broken key levels to the downside. One of the things that gives me pause with gold is I don't think that you could make the news much better for gold right now than it possibly is. You have, you know, that's the other thing, right? Markets, it's an old adage on Wall Street, markets like certainty. That's the other thing that's nuts about this. You have more uncertainty in this economy, in our relationships with geopolitical counterparts like China. I don't think you've ever seen a more opaque, more question-filled market and economy again in U.S. history. And that coincides with markets near record highs and record high valuations, which again is unprecedented. And in that environment, honestly, if you told me everything that was going on, if you told me the Fed's balance sheet has grown to $7 billion in climate or $7 trillion in climate, I remember the days when $1 billion was still real money. But you know, $7 trillion on the Fed balance sheet and climbing rapidly. You know, the federal government running 6 to 7, maybe even higher trillion deficits in a single year. I would think gold would be 2,200, 2,300. It's not. Now that might just, maybe it's just taking a rest here, which is highly possible, but you know, it's not breaking out the way that we'd think. Hopefully our interview that we're going to do with Chase Taylor clears up some more of this and brings some more context into it. But I just want to warn you, I hear so much bullish and bearish talk. And the one thing I don't hear from either side that I think is foolish is on the bullish side of it. I cannot understand, and truly, we've done the work of the research. I do not understand the bullish case. It just, to me, it is just purely wishful thinking. Again, I hope they're right. I don't want to, I don't want bad things to happen, but I'm a realist. I'm a pragmatist. I got to look at the data that I have and reality on the ground, and it's ugly. It's really ugly. If you guys don't want to deal with this level of uncertainty, if you want to know you're going to be, which, look, sometimes it gets frustrating because I'm sitting there looking at the awesome performance our clients had this last year, especially with that new momentum portfolio that we've got going. And you know, I'm contrasting that with what the average stock bond portfolio, which most of you listening are in right now. Guys, there's a better way to do it. You win either way. If the bearish scenario plays, if the real scenario plays out, if this market decides to reflect reality and valuations, which it will at some point, when I don't know, wish I did. Great. You're going to be protected. It's not going to change your retirement. It's not going to screw up your, but if the market continues to go up, you're going to have more upside than you currently do. You're going to make more money. And I don't get passionate about it because we're trying to sell something. I get passionate about it because either way, bearish or bullish, you're exposing yourselves to a whole heck of a lot of risk and you don't need to. And oh, by the way, you can also lower your fees. It's worth 20 minutes of your time. It's worth 5 minutes of your time to just call us and get the Common Sense Investing booklet. Just educate yourselves. Don't sit there and call us when reality rears its ugly head and this thing's down 40 or 50 points. Don't call us when the S&P's up another 40% 12 months from now and you were sitting in cash the entire time. Make the call now. It doesn't have to be a binary choice. So call us, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. Go to bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. The other thing, guys, we will be putting out our investors update letter that we send out to our investors. If you want to get that, if you want to receive that letter, that update, we include charts, We've gotten away from a little bit because markets have been so crazy, but we are recommitting to that. It'll be coming out once a month. If you want to get that, email us. We'll put you on the list. But just educate yourselves, guys. Know the rule. Anyway, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website. Follow us on Twitter at KYR Radio. And we got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. We're going to finish the market update, and then we're going to get into our interview with Chase Taylor. Don't go anywhere. Stick around, and we'll be right back. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH and 97.3 Cairo FM.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Having a long-term care plan, it brings certainty to a very uncertain situation. It also allows us to stay in control of our care options, and maybe most importantly, it brings peace of mind to your family during an extremely stressful situation. In Story Monson, I highly recommend doing what my wife and I did, learn about all the new long-term care plans offered by Brian Ott and 525 Advisors. Brian has two live webinars coming up in June. The first one is June 10th at 3 p.m. I'll be joining that one right after my show. And then a second on June 20th. All of Brian's live webinars are free to attend. He'll teach you everything you need to know about long-term care, including all the new plans that are available. They protect your savings, they protect your family, and the plan my wife and I got pays us back if we never use it. I can't recommend him highly enough. He's the best in the country, and he's right here in Bellevue. Sign up for one of his free live webinars coming up June 10th or June 20th. Go to 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us. But let's wrap this up because I really want to get Chase on. I really want to lay the groundwork for what we're planning to do with the interview today as far as laying out exactly where we are so you have an understanding. I think one of the things that gets investors in a lot of trouble is non-data-based evaluations, meaning, and look, guys, the best of us do it. It's one of the reasons we go, I've seen it in my trading history. I've seen it in my recollection of economic occurrences in the past, that over time, the details of those things get fuzzy and we begin to fill in, even though we don't. I had one recently that I was going to share with you guys that kind of shocked. One of them, when we were talking about the Japanese stock market, the giant crash they had in 1989 that they've subsequently never recovered from. The Nikkei market is still about 50% off the all-time highs that were set in 1989. One of them, simple one, was I went back and said the all-time highs on the Nikkei were 45,000. Somebody corrected me on it, and I was like, no, you're way wrong. I went back, checked the chart. Yeah, the all-time highs were 40,000. These things happen. It's not just to you. It's to everybody. And I think one of the problems that investors have is that they assign feelings and emotions with investing experience. And those things the most, right? Feelings and emotions, our recollection of them, it changes so much over time. We forget the joy or we forget the pain. And what we really want to do is we want to set this out and explain, right, the last 20 years in a way that helps you better understand where we're currently at and where we're headed going forward. So I think it's going to be extremely valuable, and I really hope. And as always, if I in case I forget to plug it, when you're listening to this interview with Chase and I, you're going to get cut off. It's only going to cover probably the first third of the interview. You can get all of the interviews we do with. By just subscribing to the podcast, just Google Know Your Risk Radio Stitcher. You get the podcast. You can get the new episodes emailed directly to you. It's not a big deal. Anyway, let's get into the rest of the market update. One of the things that I have thought was really interesting and really foolish at the same time is this narrative going around. And look, it's not one or two people. Our good buddy Jim Cramer is leading the charge on this. He doesn't say it exactly, but he implies it. This belief that these tech companies are recession proof, and that's why the valuations are justified. First of all, let's start by acknowledging something, and it's something that I have learned the hard way over my career. The markets are very, very rarely as stupid as you may think they are at times. Okay? But there are occasional times where the market gets incredibly offsides and is stupid. 2007 was one of those times. 2000 or 1999 was certainly one of those times. I believe one of those times is today. But the other thing that we have to realize is that people don't do this because they're idiots. Bubbles occur. Look, you can't have, by definition, a bubble without smart people participating. Okay, so this is not a, it's not an intelligence question. I think what it is it's a question about discipline. I think it's a question about pragmatism. And I think it's a question about realism, just being a realistic, you know, mind about where you currently sit. And one of the big narratives pushing tech right now is that tech is recession proof. Okay, now on the face of it, that's ridiculous, right? What is Amazon? Amazon is the world's greatest retailer, biggest retailer. Do I think Amazon is going to collapse through this process? No, not at all. I think they're an incredible business that's going to stand tall. Do I think that they're going to justify or earn their valuation? I think the chances of that are slim to none, and Slim just left town. Okay, because their results will not be what people are projecting them to be. They're subject to the winds of the economy like any other company. Okay, now let's switch over to Google and Facebook. Now, the other thing, and we mentioned this on Amazon, right? It wasn't horrible. They're ramping spending in certain areas, but even Amazon came out. They missed their earnings in first quarter by 20%. That's not insignificant. 20%, pretty big deal. Difference between a B and a D, right? Speaking grades, it's end of the school year. I got grades on the mind. But Amazon came out and said it themselves. Now, the stock doesn't seem to care, but it will. Google's frozen marketing expenses. They've frozen hiring, and newsflash came across today that they're canceling or terminating, something like that, thousands of contract employees. Okay, you don't terminate thousands of contract employees, freeze your hiring, and freeze your marketing budget if you're recession-proof. No company does that. Look at Apple, another big winner. Apple is the iPhone. Do you think Apple will sell more iPhones at $1,100 a pop over the next 12 months than they did, you know, in 2018, 2019? If you do, great. I think the chances, again, are slim to none. Let's look at Facebook and Google, right? We'll bring Google back into the mix. What are they? They're advertising companies. Essentially, that's where their revenue comes from. Do you think more companies will be paying for advertising or less? I mean, I think the obvious answer is less. Why? Because there's less companies, right? Companies that have survived are cutting their budgets. Marketing's one of the first budgets to get cut, and there's less companies. Do I think that any of those businesses are going to crater? No, but it's a ridiculous narrative. Tesla. Hey, do you think Tesla's going to sell more cars this year? Even next year? Hey, look, there are those that do. I'm not mocking them. I'm really not. But that's a religious-like belief. I mean, I think it's insane. Nobody's going to sell more cars. Are there really smart people out there that believe that's the case? Yes. There are also really smart people telling you to buy real estate in 2007 because God's not making any more of it. And I think not being a pragmatist, not being a realist in this market, and I don't know when, but it's going to cost you. And one of the really sad and tragic things to me about this is, for some reason, bubbles, and I get it on a human behavior level, but when we get into these bubbles, when we get into these markets that just defy economic reality and go straight up, regardless of valuations and price and all that kind of stuff. What happens in that scenario, and I think we all need to be honest with us, our greed or our desire to make money trumps common sense. And for whatever reason, human beings have been doing that since the dawn of time. And it's tough. Look, nobody wants to sit out a party. It's tough. But this is where you have to stop. You are not a day trader. You're not a hedge fund. You're financing the rest of your life. Can you afford to lose 50 or 60? You go, well, I don't think I'm going to. Great. Nobody ever thinks they're going to, or there wouldn't be a such thing as a bubble. Okay, but can you afford to lose 50 or 60% of your retirement assets? Okay, if you can't, a stock bond portfolio doesn't guarantee that that won't happen. You just saw a trial run, for God's sake. You just saw it. You saw it in 08. You just got another preview of it now. And what I'm telling you is if there was a way where you could ensure that you couldn't lose 50 or 60% of your portfolio and still make more to the upside if this thing keeps running, wouldn't you do that? And what if as a kicker, you could pay less in fees, 30, 40, 50, 60% less in fees? Would you do that? Look, on the face of it, if you say no to that, you're an idiot. And I'm not calling anybody an idiot. I'm just saying the answer, every investor, do you want less risk and greater returns at a cheaper price? No. Right? Everybody should say yes. Guys, we're doing it every day. We're doing it every day. Educate yourselves. Don't wait. Don't buy insurance after the fire. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. Sign up for the podcast, Google, I'm forgetting our own stuff. Google Know Your Risk Radio, Google Know Your Risk Radio Stitcher. You can go to mynorthwest.com, get our podcast on the podcast tab. It's all over the place. If you just Google Know Your Risk Radio podcast, it'll come up. iTunes, you name it, it's there. Anyway, guys, so email us. If you don't want to call us directly, you can just email us. Educate yourselves. Get the information. Get the Common Sense Investing booklet. Figure out, just understand it. And maybe you don't agree. Most people do once they take that step to educate themselves. But maybe you don't agree. Great. You know, it's more information ain't going to hurt you. But there's a better way. There's a better way. Anyway, we got to take another quick break, but we're going to be right back with Chase Taylor of Pinecone Macro Research, and we're going to get into the interview, and I think it's great stuff, so stick with us. We'll be right back. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH and 97.3 Cairo FM.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Having a long-term care plan, it brings certainty to a very uncertain situation. It also allows us to stay in control of our care options, and maybe most importantly, it brings peace of mind to your family during an extremely stressful situation. At Story Monson, I highly recommend doing what my wife and I did, learn about all the new long-term care plans offered by Brian Ott and 525 Advisors. Brian has two live webinars coming up in June. The first one is June 10th at 3 p.m. I'll be joining that one right after my show. And then a second on June 20th. All of Brian's live webinars are free to attend. He'll teach you everything you need to know about long-term care, including all the new plans that are available. They protect your savings, they protect your family, and the plan my wife and I got pays us back if we never use it. I can't recommend him highly enough. He's the best in the country, and he's right here in Bellevue. Sign up for one of his free live webinars coming up June 10th or June 20th. Go to 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. And Zach, recently one of the largest investment banks in the country, finally published research showing why a 60-40 stock bond portfolio is outdated. This is something you've been talking about on Know Your Risk Radio for years. Now they're jumping on the bandwagon.
Dory, it certainly feels that way. This research shows exactly what we've been telling people for years now. Using bonds as the safe portion of your portfolio is a serious gamble, and now is not the time to be gambling your retirement. With Bulwark's bond replacement strategy, we'll show you how to protect your portfolio against loss, but still grow your assets. We teach you exactly how to do it in our free booklet, Common Sense Investing.
Call Zach right now to get your free copy of Common Sense Investing. Call 866-779-RISK or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us. And it is my favorite time of the show. Going to get into the interview, and we are lucky enough to be joined by a friend of the show. Guy, one of our favorite gets to have on here. As always, he's one of the few people that we actually pay for information from. So for those intrepid investors doing this on their own, I'd strongly first suggest you follow this gentleman at Pinecone Macro. That's at Twitter. You can also go to pineconemacro.com. Chase, at any time, if you hear me butchering these, feel free to interrupt. But we're joined by Chase Taylor. And Chase, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, it's always great to be on. Thanks for having me again.
Is it great or is it okay? Right? Like, did you lose?
It'd be better if I was in studio, because it's been 100 degrees down here in Southern California the last couple of days.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, but you got AC, right?
Yeah, but it's not outside.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. That's true. All right. Well, and yeah, it would be better to have you up here. Plus, you know, Pinecone Macro, a lot of this stuff, you know, my theory on you is that you're really a Washingtonian that's just been misplanted. You know, you're born in Texas, you live in Southern California, but you got evergreens in your blood.
Exactly. And it's a matter of time before I end up there.
That a boy. Hopefully you can come hang your hat with us. Anyway, well, hey, let's get into it. So, Chase, I've been warming up the audience, talking about, you know, so many questions we've had about Fed liquidity and what do we mean by printing and blah, 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 blah. And I was thinking about this week, because I've encountered that question so many times. And I thought, you know, I firmly believe that context, providing context to things, and maybe it's just how I learn, but I've always been one of those people where, you know, tell me, give me instruction. But one of my, you know, the way I learn is by playing with it, right? Experience it, context, understanding how something works in action. So I thought one of the best ways to tackle this topic would be to kind of split it into three parts. A, what has happened to the American economy in the last 20 years? Because now there are some that would disagree. I mean, you can find people, it seems like, to disagree with any. I mean, there are people out there that believe the earth is flat, for crying out loud. So you could find people that would disagree. I think anybody that has any type of commitment to reality would realize that the economy over the last 20 years, and the stock market in particular, have not behaved like they have in the past. It's a bit anomalous in terms of the results we've seen, the drastic moves up, the drastic moves down. So splitting that discussion and people, so they have an understanding of Fed liquidity and what we mean by all these terms, that they first, I think you need to understand the lead up, right? You got to understand the foundational, where we came from over the last 20 years, when things started to change. And I think that leads us into the part two, which is where we're at, discussing the current situation, where we're at in terms of the structure of the economy, what we're looking at, you know, where we're headed, all that kind of stuff. And I just previewed it. But in third, you know, what that portends, what historical examples we've had of this in the past, and what that portends to in the future. So getting us rolling and starting this conversation about where we began, one of the things that I look at, and I think you hear a lot of comps from us and then from a lot of other investors, you know, on CNBC or on other interviews, there's a lot of talk and a lot of comparison to the tech bubble and today, because it really, 1999 is really the only parallel we can draw in terms of valuations on the overall stock market. It's that historically out of line. And so looking back at the tech bubble, where did that, you know, what were the big contributors of that? Now, I don't know how much time you've spent digging into this, but to me, to really understand that move, I think that you have to go back to the late 80s when Greenspan took over for Volcker, because, again, I don't think anybody would argue with the fact that the way Greenspan managed things, the maestro, as they call him, or I don't know if they call him that anymore, but there was a decided sea change in how things were managed, and monetary policy really came to the fore. You know, Greenspan was Volcker was much more, you know, let the market do what it does. We're not here to rescue stocks. Greenspan thought, you know, he basically thought the Fed's dual mandate entitled him to run pretty much everywhere. And, you know, we've said before, he was the guy that opened Pandora's box and then burned it, you know, ensuring that we'd never get it back in and never get Pandora back in the box. And I think that that very much led up to the tech bubble. Would you agree with that? What do you think? Do you think liquidity played a role in the tech bubble? And do you think that was really the first time where we saw markets, you know, you had bullish sentiment because of what was going on in the tech world. The other thing I think is interesting to point out are the people that make the comparisons between today's valuations and the tech bubble. In 1999, you had 4% GDP growth. You know, this year, where we have surpassed now, at least on paper, not adjusted for interest rates, of course, but we've surpassed those record valuations on virtually all valuation metrics. But we've done so in a year where, you know, you're going to see a GDP hit in our estimation somewhere between 12 to 15% on the year. So the backdrops couldn't be different. But to me, it looks like there's a similar culprit. There's a similar reason. There's a similar momentum. Do you think the Fed had a lot to play in that tech bubble in the late 90s? Or do you think that was just a classic bubble, just consumer driven, you know, investor driven?
No, it definitely had a lot to do with the Federal Reserve. And I think he kind of nailed it with the role Alan Greenspan played after the stock market, you know, the Black Monday collapse. 1987, that really freaked a lot of people out, freaked out Wall Street, freaked out the Fed. And they kind of made a conscious decision to go really far with monetary policy. And then they left it that way for a long time. So, you know, you mentioned, you know, GDP being around 4% in 1999, go back and look at, you know, the 10-year treasury yield, and it was about 6% at some points in 1999. So, you know, we just had a much different, you know, structured economy. Then we were at a much different spot, you know, sort of in the long-term debt cycle where we still had, you know, a lot of room to keep ratcheting down interest rates. But at the same time, you know, where we were, he held them down to what, you know, a lot of people would consider to be an artificially low level that drived a lot, it drove a lot of money into risk assets. And, you know, that kind of just fueled that tech bubble.
And for those of you that don't understand the relationship between interest rates, again, I think that it's a nuanced topic, meaning that if I can make 4%, let's say, in a U.S. government bond, which is considered to be the least riskiest asset on the face of the earth, so much so that in the financial industry we refer to it as the risk-free rate. If I can make 4% in a U.S. government bond, chances are that I'm going to take less risk in my portfolio. Right? Because 4% or even 6%, I don't need to take as much risk because that's accomplishing my financial goals, right? It's achieving my need for retirement income. If those rates drop substantially, if I'm looking at a US 10-year right now, which I think is paying about 0.63, that's obviously not as attractive. So I am more likely to go out further into stocks, right? Think about it. I've got stocks out there like ConocoPhillips or Chevron. I am getting paid a 6% dividend to own them right now, right? Now, are those risky stocks? No, not per se, not traditionally in terms of, I mean, you can see big ups and downs, but you're not going to, you know, they've stood the test of time. It's hard to justify sitting there making 0.6% in a U.S. government bond when you can get paid 6% on a stock just by way of dividend. So the interest rates certainly play a role. We're not saying, I think that, and I don't know what your opinion on this, Chase, is. I'd like to hear your thoughts. I think it's sort of like the valuation or the bull bear cases right now. I think that they're way too binary. I don't think that either side of it acknowledges the fact that they could be completely wrong. I think the people out there, the interest rate debate is very much the same to me in the sense that people believe that, look, 0% interest rates can justify any valuation. I think that's laughable. Then you have the people on the other side of it that go, you know, interest rates should have no bearing on valuation. I find that laughable as well. Where do you sit on that?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree that it's somewhere in between, and, you know, because if just having rates at zero meant you could, you know, justify enormous spikes in prices, then you'd have a really difficult time explaining European or Japanese equities right now.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, the U.S. is a different market with a lot of different, you know, drivers. And I do think, you know, the rate you can discount, you know, stocks versus being really low, and not to mention just the discount rate, but, you know, what you're valuing against, you know, the alternative for your investment money, you know, being, you know, yielding essentially nothing these days. I do think that does drive a lot of money into equities. you know, which kind of pushes up the risk premium, you know, in the equity market. So like you say, you can't say it has nothing to do with it, and you can't say it's everything, and it means that, you know, price to sales ratios of 30 makes sense. Like that's not the case, but I do think, you know, when you have rates at nothing, and then you are just going to naturally get higher equity prices. So I think there is some explanatory value there, just maybe not as much as a lot of bulls would like to think.
Okay, now the interesting thing moving forward then, I think everybody knows what happened in the tech. All right, unfortunately for time, we got to cut it off there. I hate to do that to you, but again, as always, I think this is a very valuable interview, and I think it's imperative that investors understand the message of this interview, maybe more than other interviews we've done in the past. We've done some great ones, but I think you just need to understand context. And the way you can do that, you can get the rest of the interview off the podcast, Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Just Google that. Google Know Your Risk Radio. Stitcher. Stitcher's a popular site. We're on iTunes, you name it. If you want to find it, you're there. And then you can subscribe. It'll just send it to your email inbox every single week. And you'll, you know, then you can listen to the radio show whenever you want to. You don't have to wait till noon. Maybe you listen to it just to burn time sitting in the park. Who knows? Walking around the neighborhood, whatever. But yeah, sign up for that. And as always, guys, give us a call. Educate yourselves. I'm going to keep pounding that. There's a better way. We haven't been on the radio talking about it for 5 years because of snake oil. There's a better way. There's just a better way to do it. Call us at 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. Request the Common Sense Investment Booklet. You don't have to call. You can email in directly. We can deal with you that way. Just educate yourselves. Get the information. And be good either way. Sleep well at night. Go on vacation knowing that no matter what happens, you're fine. Anyway, we'll see you guys next week. Have a wonderful weekend. And we'll be back, as always, for another hour of the most scintillating. No, see, screwed it up. Anyway, we're going to get out of here. Have a great weekend, you guys. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH and 97.3 Cairo FM.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham now at knowyourriskradio.com. Zach will be back with more Know Your Risk Radio next Saturday at noon on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH.
Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.